Accession number 10923, reel 6.
Mr. Harold Harper, reel 6. We were talking about the time when you were trapped in Tobruk with the regiment. With the tank attack and then the air raids, how did you... You said that the original gun positions were pretty shallow and not, you know, and you... How did the defences develop?
Well, obviously, after about 4 or 5 weeks, we realised we were there to stay. And obviously, we did everything to try and defend ourselves, make ourselves as comfortable as possible, as well as protecting ourselves with sandbags and goodness knows anything which we could get in the way of defence. The gun pits were made deeper, well camouflaged.
How deep would you get them?
We got the gun pits down to about 3 feet deep, which is quite, because you couldn't go too deep with a 25 pounder because of the barrel. You got to point out outside the gun pit anyway.
How would they protect it other than that? Would there be sandbags?
Sandbags at the front of the gun.
What about camouflage? I'm thinking of camouflage from the air and camouflage from the Germans, who were only 6,000 yards.
That's right, yeah.
How did you do it from the air? Was it?
That was through netting, yeah. And there again, we adopted the system of sweeping the sand behind the guns to try and kid on the enemy that we weren't there, so to speak.
Could something like a dive bomber not see through that sort of
thing? Oh, I'm sure they probably did. But the more one did those sort of things, the more you felt secure. Whether you were kidding the enemy on or not, we never knew.
What about camouflage from the front? Ground level camouflage. Was that possible? I mean, did you try and disguise the position from the enemy?
From the front, yes. But in all fairness, we, as the situation in Tobruk developed, the Germans were always, they camped outside Tobruk, and there was this ridge, not a steep ridge, but it was nevertheless a slope up to the outskirts where all the tank traps were and everything on the outskirts of Tobruk, then a slope down towards the harbour, and we were on sort of 6,000 yards down that slope, so we couldn't be observed, only from the air. But
I see. What about the development of the Don Troop command post? I mean, that was originally just
the grain carrier.
Then it was the trench, was it?
That's right. Well, obviously, we developed that in the same way as the gun pits. I mean, we made it as comfortable as we possibly could.
Did you actually make it into a dugout, or did it?
Yes, we made it into a dugout. With a top on.
What was the top?
The top was made of corrugated iron and a few sandbags chucked on.
So it was no use against a bomb.
Oh, good heavens, no. No, really, it was the main use against it was against sandstorms, quite frankly. And we had to carry on working while sandstorms were on, and horrific.
I want to come back to sandstorms later, because there's a couple of other things like that I want to talk about. What about, did you have slit trenches everywhere, as you developed a system of mercenary,
we had a system, yes, whereby there was never more than about 20 yards without there was a slit trench on and around the gun position.
And were they the same as 60?
That's right, yeah. That's right, sort of. Enough to get about 3 blokes in, sort of crouching down.
Any other defensive measures?
No, when they say defensive measures...
What was done to the vehicles?
They were camouflaged and dug in.
What do you mean by dug in?
Well, in other words, they were... They were slanted into a pit, so to speak. So it's only probably of the gun towers. You could only see about 3 feet of the sticking above the surface, so to speak. Yeah. So in other words, they were protected from shell, from shrapnel, that's all. I mean, if they'd had a direct hit with a bomb, there's nothing you could do about it. But, I mean, as you know, shrapnel was flies all over the show. And so there's always a good chance that the engine at least was protected by being below level.
Did you get much shelling?
Yes. Oh, yes. We did a fair amount of night firing, and sooner or later the Germans got onto the positions through the flashes, or what they call flash spotting. In my work as a surveyor, I did a fair amount of flash spotting.
I'll come back to that. That's right. But the Germans spotted your position.
Oh, yes.
So how long did you think it took before they registered you?
Probably about 3 nights firing.
So very early on.
Yeah, so it was 3 night fires. So it would be in the middle of May, I would imagine, when they really started plastering us.
About 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Could they not hit you? I mean, what,
oh, yes,
if they knew where they were, how come they...
Oh, yes, Don Troop lost one complete gun detachment in one evening. It was quite a nasty sight. A shell landed in the gun pit. So that was...
Would a shell have to hit the gun pit to put a gun out of action?
Yes, pretty well.
How close would they get when they were trying to shell you out?
Oh, we're talking about 20 yards, 50 yards, anything sort of in the area was dangerous.
But it had to be in the gun pit.
But the one that put our gun out of action, yes. And then, in all fairness, having said that it didn't do sufficient damage to the gun, we were still able to use the gun later.
Who would repair it in those circumstances?
Well, we've got artificers, but it was the men, really, who took the full blast of that one, rather than the gun itself.
Was that your first major set of casualties?
Apart from the early dive bombing, yes. Mm.
Did casualties upset you, or...?
Yes. After all, I mean, these chaps you'd known for 18 months, been out with them and goodness knows what else, and listened to all their stories and what have you.
Did you lose any particular friends at that time?
Yes, I had a chappie who I'd worked very, very closely with as a signaller. He was the one who was at the side of me when he got killed.
Yeah. Now, you were promoted to bombardier, full bombardier.
Full bombardier, that's right.
Why was that, do you think?
I would think based mainly on responsibility. And then later in the campaign, I was promoted to Land Sergeant. So before the Tobruk campaign was over, I was a sergeant.
What responsibilities did Bombardier bring, and then Land Sergeant? I mean, was it the same work?
The same work to a great extent, but I suppose really you were left to your own devices a little bit more. For example, we pulled the guns out of position on one or two occasions and took them to an alternative position when we thought we were getting shelled a bit too much. And we moved back to the original position to do some calibrating. And the troop commander let me take the guns back and calibrate them.
What was that? Could you tell me how you calibrated?
Well, it was a question of... We'd done so much firing, it was decided that the guns may need some sort of readjustment. And we aimed at a fixed target, which we knew was in accordance... It was a trig point on the map. And that was registered by the pluses and minuses by the officer up at the OP.
So you mean that a gun that was firing long or short?
That's right, yeah.
Would it be short or long?
It would be short. Mm.
So if a gun was firing short, it meant would that build that into your future calculation?
No. If it was firing terribly short, we'd have to replace the barrel, which was probably about a 6 or 8 hour job done by the artificer.
You'd have spare barrels with you?
We had spare barrels, but then, of course, as the siege of Tobruk carried on, and they literally stopped ships coming into the place at all, the things like gun barrels and ammunition became very, very scarce. I mean, that's why we had this terrific lull in Tobruk in July, August, sort of September time, when not a lot of firing was done. And I think the Germans were quite content to say, well, if we hang on long enough, these characters will pack up. So for those 3 months, it was a very quiet sort of period. But
come back to calibration. You see, if they were really short,
they were dangerous then, because you could be landing in your own infantry if you're not careful.
So what would you do if they were just a bit short? Did you build that into your?
We would build that into the calculation. Yeah,
and that would be done. Would that be done at the stage? Would it be done at the gun
position end?
So you just send back the instructions to the number one. If number two was firing short,
we give him an additional length to range to fire at.
So, hang on. So who'd make that? That was a service.
That would be people like myself.
So it was done at that stage. That's right, done at the gun, the troop command post.
Troop command post, that's right.
This lull that went on, what was life like during that period?
Pretty grim. Obviously, there was no movement. One of the things we did was to have what we call bath parades, which were, we went into an area about 2 miles to the west of the harbour, where there was a little sort of harbour affair or little inlet, and the bathing there was reasonable, and the chances of being bombed there were sort of negligible, I would think. It wasn't anything of a target. And that was one way of keeping clean.
Was there any other way? You sort of implies there was other ways.
Yeah, there was a... We tried. The water was desperately short. We invariably had a shave with the bottom of our cup of tea, or mug of tea. If you've got one wash in 2 days, you know, that was about as much as you could manage. You used to use a sort of a bit of rag and rub it over your face out for the best. Get yourself reasonably...
Just a damp rag.
Damp rag, that's right.
This water shortage, how was the water issued to you?
Water bottles. But you had one water bottle for, good heavens, about 2 days, I think it was. And then all the other water ration went into the cookhouse.
And that was tea?
That was just tea. That's right, yeah.
Did thirst cause any problems to you?
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah, most definitely. Particularly, I mean, you were working most of the time and doing laborious tasks. And by this time, I mean, we all used to take a turn on going on the guns, and it was the officer's policy for everybody to keep having a swap round. I think this was...
I'll come back to that. That's interesting. So Did it actually affect your health, the lack of water, do you think? Or was it just a... What sort of level of discomfort were you in?
It's just a question of survival, really. I don't suppose it was... We never reached the crisis stage, but there was never any enough water to deal with all our needs.
So it was just a discomfort.
Just discomfort, really.
Well, did it taste all right?
Oh no, it was well and truly chlorinated, or whatever they call it. It would be chlorinated, because we got so used to the taste of chlorinated tea that when we tasted the real stuff, eventually it tasted queer.
What about your rations? You told us, of course, what the basic rations were. Were they even more limited in Tobruk?
Yes, but funnily enough, we still managed to get one day per week when we got soya sausages, and that was... We knew it was Thursday then.
Soya sausages.
And they were in tins.
But made from soya beans.
That's right, yeah. And we knew when it was Tuesday, because that was when the cigarette ration came.
The food, did they try and vary it by different methods? Were you still cooking yourselves, or did the cookhouse?
No, the cookhouse was doing all the feeding, and of course we had to have every meal. Took about 2 hours, because we would never allow more than probably 5 or 6 blokes at the cookhouse at the time.
So you went back to the cookhouse to feed?
That's right, yeah.
That must have been the problem with keeping the track.
That's right, yeah. And then, of course, we had to, having got them to the cookhouse, you had to make them disperse. There was always this tendency to want to hang around in case there was any more, but you had to send them back to the guns. To make sure that there was no danger of more than 5 or 6 blokes being killed at the same time.
Did they manage to, with the limited ingredients they got, did they have any special recipes or methods of presentation?
We had... That caused quite a laugh, really. We didn't know what to laugh about in those days, and I think the cooking was probably one of the centre points of a bit of laughter, because we were convinced that our cook... could make bully beef 9 different ways. He used to put bully beef in batter and serve them up bully beef fritters and bully beef this and bully beef that, you know. And
do you remember any of the other examples?
Oh, no, I can't, quite frankly, but he, of course, 9 times out of 10 he would throw the bully beef into a stew.
So nothing that special.
Good heavens, no.
Now, you mentioned cigarette ration came up. Is this, you said earlier that you started to smoke?
I didn't smoke in Tobruk.
Oh, you didn't smoke?
No, I didn't smoke. I used to have, for my 50 cigarettes, I used to have a raffle every week. And I did enormously well with this raffle. But I used to give the money every time to the prisoner of war, to the Red Cross. Had I hung on to it, I'd probably been a rich man, but no, it went to the Red Cross.
And, how did you organise the raffle?
Just bits of paper, toilet paper, anything.
And how much would you sell the tickets for?
I think 5 piastres, I think it was, or something like that, which was a shilling.
And how many would you sell?
Oh, the blokes used to they'd go mad for cigarettes.
So most of the battery are troopers?
Oh, yes. All the troop. But everybody were going for this raffle.
Within the troop?
Within the troop, yeah.
So most people smoke then? You must...
Oh, yes. I was one of the few who didn't.
Was there any reason you didn't?
I'd never smoked. I'd been very athletic, and I always got the impression that smoking and athletics didn't go together.
Now, you mentioned...
Later on, as the war developed and the nerves got a bit more tingly, then I started smoking.
I'll The desert sort of conditions, you mentioned the sandstorms.
Oh, yes.
You didn't mention them at Mersa Matruh. Had you had them there?
We had them at Mersa Matruh, but quite honestly, never. We were well dug in Mersa Matruh. The only time we ever experienced sandstorms in Mersa Matruh was if we happened to be out on some sort of manoeuvre. But certainly at Tobruk, I mean, we really knew what sandstorms were there. Because
can you explain what they were like? I mean, yeah, what was it like to be caught?
Just, you saw the things coming along and it just looked like one red mass in the air, and the blotting out the sun and everything, quite frankly. And the wind would get up, and literally this sand would hit you so hard that it on occasion it would even make your skin sort of bleed. And the discomfort is almost difficult to describe, because we used to dress ourselves up and we used to look like these cowboys. We had scarves over our faces, and all you could see was a little bit of eyes, and of course your ears all got bunged up and goodness knows what else. That was the only way you could sort of survive in the sandstorms. Of course, the only one consolation was there was never any firing done during the sandstorm.
How long would they last for?
Can I tell you? Can I break now into a very unusual story?
Mm-hmm.
This, it was at the observation post. I was doing my stint up there. And this observation post was in right on the perimeter of Tobruk and was in the form of a concrete emplacement, which had been obviously put there by the Italians.
Did it have a name?
I can't remember, quite frankly, but it was a concrete expense. And we were sitting down there one evening and there's a sandstorm raging outside. And there was about four or five of us there. I can't quite remember the numbers. One officer and a couple of signalers and myself or something like that. And a driver, probably. And we were playing cards by the light of a hurricane lamp. And lo and behold, the flap of the tarpaulin, which was over the top of the concrete embracement, the tarpaulin came back and a pair of legs descended into the, and we thought, who the dickens can this be at this time of the night, you see? The next thing was a Dixie full of stew, and then lo and behold, this lad came down, a very young boy, looked to be about 17-18 at the very most, German lad, and he'd strayed. He was a cook in the cookhouse, obviously. He'd strayed in this sandstorm and lost his way. Managed to see this little chink of light, I presume, which we'd left uncovered, and established, thought it was his own crowd, and appeared in our dugout. And then I suppose we committed what might have been described in Whitehall as a crime, because all we did was to eat the lad's stew and then send him, and then I took him up to the top and pointed him back in the direction of the German lines and told him where to go. Now, how he managed to explain to his friends when he got back what had happened, I don't honestly know, but if he's still alive to this day, he probably still thinks about that. But that is one little amusing story that...
It shows how easy it was to get lost as well in the sandstorm.
In a sandstorm, it's terrible. It really was. It was in a sandstorm that a colleague of mine was shot by an Australian. The Australians, as you know, probably from the history, we made very big friends of them. They were the Australian infantry, and he went out of the dugout, up the observation post, walked about 15 yards away, and because we always had this strict instruction that we never urinated too close, so he sort of wandered about 20 yards away, and this Australian shot him.
And that was in a sandstorm?
In a sandstorm. Yeah. And fortunately, he's still alive today. But he lost a lung in the bargain. Yeah.
How common were they, the sandstorms? I mean, what frequency?
Frequency, oh, gosh. I would think about two per week.
Mm. And how long would a typical one last?
A typical one would last about 6 or 7 hours. Yeah. Sometimes all day, but they blow themselves out in the
back. That's enough time. You'd have to go out sometimes.
Yeah.
How did you make sure you didn't get lost?
Well, this was one of the problems. If you did have to go out, you were very, very cautious indeed. No doubt about that. In fact, you relied terribly on the compass and made sure that you kept within those limits of the compass.
You think that you said it when it hit the skin, it made it sometimes bleed. Would that contribute to the desert sores?
Oh yes, yeah. And of course, sand in itself would—if you got a little sore, then you got sand in it as well. It would contribute to them. So,
what about other desert things? What about the heat? We didn't discuss that either at Mercer Matruk.
No.
Was heat a problem during that summer at Tobruk?
No, not really, because by then we were really well and truly acclimatised desert warriors.
How did you cope with it? Or was it just your body got used to it?
Your body got used to it. Yes.
Would you try and stay in during the hottest part of the day? I mean,
Yes, we would. During the hottest part of the day, you'd find a bit of shade somewhere and get your head down and make sure that...
What about covering your head? I mean, that was an old taboo in the British Army at one point. Did you try and keep your head covered? Or?
No, funny enough, we only wore, most of us didn't, we never wore tin helmets. And we certainly never wore topies. I mean, they were too bulky anyway, but we just wore our own little chip hat.
No problem by then with things like sunburn?
Oh, no, no. No, we'd overcome all those sort of things then.
Were there the mirages, were they a problem, especially in your work?
Yeah, that's right. We could see from the observation post when we were up there. It was always difficult. You could see the German convoys going along, but you had no idea where they, just exactly how far away they were. They were going along what they call the El Adam Road, which was about 5 or 6 miles south of Tobruk. But it was difficult to sort of, because they appeared to be floating in the air around sort of from about 11 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. That was one of the problems.
What about any other, you mentioned, we've talked about the flies. I presume, that were they a nuisance in Tobruk as well?
Oh yes, just the same.
Were there any other pests? I'm thinking of things like scorpions.
Yes, there were scorpions.
What were they like?
One of the, just occasionally they would rear up, but the worst things in Tobruk was there was what they called camel ticks. Have you heard of camel ticks? They were a sort of a beetle which got under the skin, and the only way you could get them out was to get a hot match head and put it on the head of this thing, and it would automatically get itself out. It would draw it out. They would
not. What would happen if you just scratched them off? Would that cause infection?
Yes. And we